Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I am your host, Abraham Hamilton III, and I'm so glad, blessed, fortunate, every other descriptor you may want to put in there to be with you on today's program. Many of you making your way from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs. I am grateful that you have chosen to allow me to accompany you on that journey. Hannah's in the screening room. Mr. Reed is on my right. But if you notice, the J squared contingent is down one J. And that gives me an opportunity to do on the air what I've been doing behind the scenes all day long, which is to celebrate the arrival of the first child born to the Tross family. Congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Tross on the healthy birth of your baby. I won't give all the goods out. I want to leave room for Jason to come in and share what he wants to share. But I'm just telling you, I am bubbling over with excitement at being able to be a part of the life of a new image bearer, being born into a family where I know their parents are committed to rearing their child in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I say it all the time, that the Lord has equipped the Christian family with the capacity to internally execute the Great Commission by bearing fruit and rearing that fruit as disciples. Oh man, I get so excited. I've said this before, but some of you may not know, some of you may be new to the program. I've known Jason since he's been in elementary school. I've known his wife, Mrs. Tross, since I was a freshman in college, 1998. And so being able to watch them and to see them both grow in the Lord individually, and then to see how the Lord brought them together, man, it's phenomenal. And I won't tell a whole story. I have to get Jason to come in to tell a story, but I'll just let you guys know this. Mr. and Mrs. Tross met in Bible study. And I'll just leave it there. I'm just telling you. I'll just leave it there. They both came to Bible study, and they came, he saw, they married. I'm just telling you, that's how it is. But again, congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Tross, and also congratulations to those grandparents, the Taylor family, the Tross family. I know both sides of their families as well, and if not more so, in terms of excitement, as Jason and his wife are, I know these grandparents are over the moon with excitement. So this is an exciting day in the Hamilton Corner. One of our own has had a baby. So I can't contain my excitement. That is good news, and I'm glad to be able to share that with all of you. Okay, you all know it. It is our custom to turn our attention at the beginning of the program to the Word of God, and we will do that today. We are going to go to Joshua chapter 24, verses 13 through 15, just two short verses, Joshua chapter 24, verses 13 through 15. The Bible tells us in Judges chapter 2, verse 8, that Joshua lived until he was 110 years old. This is a picture of the elder statesman Joshua engaging in the king's business concerning the Israelite community that the Lord has graced him to become a shepherd of. You recall that when the Hebrews originally approached the Jordan River, that 12 spies were selected. Joshua, the young man Joshua, the young strapping Joshua, who was even at that time regarded as being one of the heads of his clan and his tribe, went into the promised land. And they had a bifurcation in perception. You had 10 of the spies who came back kind of like the cowardly lion. Put them all.
We're like grasshoppers on that side. We can't do anything. We can't maneuver. We can't bob or weave. We may have to bob and Steve. You know, it was pretty terrible. But then the Bible says that Joshua and Caleb had a different spirit. And from there, you know the story, the original Exodus Israelites did not enter the promised land. But those who were the subsequent generation did enter the promised land. I just drew a blank. Moses did not enter the promised land. He saw it, but did not enter. Joshua ended up doing the leading. And so here we are, literally, the Bible tells us, at the end of Joshua's life, we have this particular portion of scripture. And I learned a long time ago from one of the elders in my church where I grew up in New Orleans that the parting message reveals truth, that you have parting messages that carry a weight that should be given credence. In fact, this is just a legal moment, for example. One of the exceptions, or I'll say one of the exclusions, you have exceptions and exclusions to the rule of evidence that prohibits the admission of hearsay into a court of law at trial. Hearsay being an out-of-court statement offered in court for the truth of the matter asserted in the statement, that is, by definition, hearsay. And a statement made out of court that is offered in court for the truth of the matter asserted. Well, one of the exclusions from the hearsay rule, meaning an out-of-court statement that though it's made out of court and it's offered for the truth of the matter asserted, one of those statements that are allowed in court by rule, according to the rules of evidence, the federal rules of evidence and the state rules of evidence, what I've practiced, is called a dying declaration. Why is that? Because the rules of evidence take into consideration that a person would be highly unlikely to tell a lie when they're about to die. Now, you ask, now, why would our rules of evidence take that into consideration? Well, I'll just let you know this, in case you want to try to challenge the Judeo-Christian ethos that underpins our legal framework. It is based on the presumption and an assumption that people living in the American context are cognizant of the fact that once you die, you have to meet your maker. And so people who are about to die, they don't want to lie on the way out. So dying declarations are categorically excluded from the hearsay prohibition. Normally, the standard rule is hearsay is excluded from admission in a court of law, but a dying declaration, meaning a statement made out of court, offered in court for the truth of the matter asserted, but it is offered by a person who is dying at the time and who expires, or who believes that, or a person who is dying at the time, that would be admissible in a court of law. Where here we have not necessarily a dying declaration, as the rules of evidence would define them, but you have a statement made at the latter part of Joshua's life, recorded for you in Joshua chapters 23 and 24. Now, why do I mention both chapters? Because chapter 23 has Joshua admonishing the leadership in Israel, the judges, the elders, the heads of families. He's admonishing the leadership. Joshua 24 is instruction for the entire Israelite assembly. That includes leadership, but it is the entire Israelite assembly. Now, I'm going to read this, and then we're going to dig into it a little bit. So here we go. Joshua chapter 24, verse 13 through 15 is what I'm going to read. I gave you a land. This is Joshua saying what the Lord has done. I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities that you had not built, and you dwell in them. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive orchards that you did not plant. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your father served beyond the river, which is the Jordan River, that's the reference there, and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river, meaning the Jordan River again, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, let me say this. First, the verse I read in verse 13 is actually the concluding statement to Joshua reciting for the Israelites a summary of their history. God delivering them from Egyptian slavery, God moving them through a 40-year trek through the desert, the wilderness of Israel, and then moving them into the promised land, and then recounting for them the Lord ushered them, not by their own might, but by his might, into a land that they had not toiled or labored for, inheriting vineyards and things of that nature that the Lord had opened to them. So in light of that, you see Joshua saying to them at verse 14, now therefore, I say it all the time, when you see a therefore, we must ask, what is it there for? The therefore is here because Joshua is saying, in light of this robust history of God acting on your behalf, his omnipotence operating on your behalf, his sovereignty being exercised on your behalf, therefore, in light of that reality, you should fear the Lord. The fear reference here is not to terrorized by the Lord, but it's actually talking about reverence and true devotion. In light of all who God is and what he has been on your behalf, offer the Lord reverence and true devotion. And on top of revering him and devoting yourself to him, serve him, meaning the Lord, in sincerity and faithfulness. Now look at this B portion of verse 14. Put away the gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt. Wait a minute. You mean to tell me after all of that, 40 years in the wilderness, pillar of fire by night, pillar of cloud by day, being fed manna, seeing the miracles, seeing a former slave-laden community become a warrior tribe, seeing all of this, you mean to tell me Joshua still has to remind them to stay away from idolatry? Are you kidding me, man? Are you crazy? Now, before you too quickly begin to pounce on the Israelites, pause for a moment and reflect on your own life. How good has God been in your life? What has God saved you from? I know what God has saved me from. I know very well. How easy is it for us in our lifestyles where we have, you know, we're at a time now, you know, you have to dial your phone, you get in the car, you talk to that bad boy, you start ringing. You know, text messages pop up. You can say, play the text message, and it comes on in your car. I mean, we have, you know, air conditioning and heating. One small thing, a lot of people who haven't traveled internationally, they don't realize in AC, central air and heat is a luxury. You can go to some top-notch hotels in other countries, you won't have AC in your room. You might not central. You have to pay extra for that. Indoor plumbing, a restroom in your room, in your home, overseas in different countries, you have to pay extra for a toilet in your hotel room. Folks, we have it pretty good in the United States of America. So before we too quickly pounce on these Israelites who had witnessed the wonders of God's majesty, how often have we witnessed the wonders of God's majesty? Yet we find ourselves vacillating between the two opinions of idolatry or Yahweh worship. And the main idol that we struggle with is not one that's external, but it's internal. That idol called S-E-L-F, self. Yes. Here you have Joshua in his elder statesman role after having gone through all of the wars and all of these other miraculous things. Joshua and his elder statesman's position, over 100 years old now, having to tell the Israelites, man, will y'all please put away the idols? Now, can we please put away the idols? He goes on. Now, he's already said, fear the Lord. Right? Reverence and devotion. He's already said, serve him in sincerity and faithfulness, but then he doubles down. Verse 15. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, man, Joshua's putting an even sharper point on it. Could it be that there was still some idols floating around in the hearts of the Israelites? Apparently so. If it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, see, Joshua is putting the needle on the record, so to speak. He's putting the pin in the groove on this one, letting them know that, folks, idolatry is not some passive existence. In fact, it is rank evil before the Lord. It is robust and disgusting evil. It smells putrid before his nostrils, and it is disgusting. He says, if it's evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river, that's beyond the Jordan, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But then Joshua says, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You see, Joshua does what all leaders should do. In addition to proclaiming and announcing what should be done, he begins by saying, I'll be the first one to demonstrate for you how it should be done. So I posed a question to you that the Lord, through Joshua, posed to the Israelites. After, in light of all that God has done, are you ready now to shelve those idols? Because the reality is, as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, the day comes repeatedly where we're going to have to make a decision. Life and death is set before you. I encourage you to choose life.
New law protects innocence. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. A wonderful new Indiana law requires parental approval before teaching human sexuality. The schools must accurately explain the curriculum regarding abortion, abstinence, contraception, sexual activity, or orientation. The schools must allow parents to review what their children will be taught with the option to opt out. Parents must also approve any curriculum which persuades to change a child's political affiliation, religious beliefs, orientation, or gender identity. Liberty Counsel has notified every Indiana public school district of the new rules for this school year. And we have created a non-consent form for parents to protect their children from harmful sex ed materials and indoctrination in matters of sexuality. This puts all Indiana schools on notice. If schools expose children to this material after notice from parents, they risk liability for parental rights violations. You can find this form on our website at lc.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I'm reading through the Old Testament now, and I'm coming to places that are named that I see on our Israel tour every March. It's really fascinating to think that Jericho existed way back in the Old Testament, thousands of years ago, and I can visit there today. The same can be said for Jerusalem. The Bible literally comes to life when you visit Israel, the Holy Land. Now, we're going in March. My wife, Allison, and I, we lead these tours every March. So if you would like to go with us, you need to go to the website and check it out. It's twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. That's 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Winston Churchill accurately described Islam as the, quote, most retrograde force in the world, end quote. More evidence comes from a dilapidated compound in New Mexico where 11 children were found in squalid conditions. Authorities say the man who ran the compound, Siraj ibn Wahaj, was an extremist of the Muslim belief. Evidence is now emerging that he was training the children in the compound to carry out shootings in American schools. Wahaj's grandfather is an imam at an extremist mosque here in America who is an unindicted co-conspirator in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. In Europe, between 2014 and 2017, minors under the age of 18 were involved in 34 terrorist plots. What is clear is that it's no longer just Muslim adults we need to keep an eye on.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. Man, I'm so excited I can't keep it together. I know some people would let us know I had a hot mic going on. Thank you very much for doing that. But this is just a day we kind of hard to keep it together. I mean, we got a new baby in the corner. What are we going to do? I'm smiling so hard my cheeks are starting to hurt. On a day of good news, I want to continue sharing good news. And this is one of those stories that you might not have heard had you been limited to media that is comprised of snakes that talk. You know, the kind of say, well, did God surely save? I may be able to walk today, but if I crawl on my belly, it may be worth it if you eat this fruit. Talking snake devils, I'm telling you. If you listen to them, you probably wouldn't hear this story. But this is good news because if we don't hear these kind of stories, it's very easy for the talking snakes to shape perception to where you begin to think their propaganda is reality. And I'm saying their propaganda generally, you know who the lead purveyors of talking snakeness consist of. A lot. Some local news agencies do a very good job. Some of them do. But many of the mainstream propagandists are just that, propagandists. And I have no problem with people sharing their opinion. Just tell us it's your opinion. This is an opinion show. I give you some information, but I give you my opinion. That's what it is. I make no bones about that. I do share information that I think you won't get from other places, but this is an opinion show. Well, here's the news I want to share with you. Just last week, and this happened while I was out west, and I was eager to talk about it, but you know these shows sometimes run out of time. The music gets so disrespectful right at about 6 p.m. But the Senate in Argentina, voted last week to reject a bill that would have erased the country's constitutional protection for most preborn babies and legalized abortion in Argentina during the first 14 weeks of pregnancy. Currently in Argentina, abortion is illegal during those first 14 weeks pursuant to Argentina's constitution. So in order for the abortion law to change in Argentina, they would have had to repeal certain constitutional provisions. In addition to allowing abortion in those first 14 weeks of the baby's life, yes, I said it, the first 14 weeks of the baby's life, the repeal measure would have also legalized late-term abortions in cases of fetal deformity or to protect mothers' quote-unquote psychological health. Now, how is that defined? Great question, because that creates an amorphous term that would allow people to cure their babies when it would not have allowed that. And, you know, I really take great umbrage at these suggestions that indicate life is valuable if this, you know, and this is why I encourage the listeners to this program, when we talk about the sanctity of human life, that we don't think about and talk about what a baby could be. You know, because their value is intrinsic to being made in the image of God, not based on their performance. Their performance is, as we say in Louisiana, lanyap. That's extra. You know, that's aside. There is inherent value and worth in every human being because they are bearers of the image of God. An innocent human life should be protected from womb to the tomb. Right? Well, let me keep going. In addition to this, this measure, which many people thought would pass, the repeal measure to change Argentina's constitutional provisions concerning abortion, it passed in the Argentinian version of the House of Representatives. It's called the country's Chamber of Deputies. So it passed in the Chamber of Deputies by a narrow margin, 129 to 123. Well, a pretty influential senator by the name of Silvina Garcia Laraburu withdrew her support from the bill, and the bill ultimately died in the Senate when 38 senators voted against it and 31 voted in favor of it. Now, I want to play for you some audio that is going to sound a little off because it's not necessarily verbiage that I want to capture, but I want you to listen to the sounds of these Argentinian people celebrating the failure of this law. And I want to be clear on this. These people are celebrating the fact that Argentina's abortion laws were not changed and abortion remains criminal during those first 14 weeks. If you would, Mr. Reed, please play clip number two. Now, these people are celebrating the fact that life in the womb is protected in Argentina. The vote on this particular bill followed contentious public debate domestically and internationally. But wouldn't you know, or not wouldn't you know, did you know that there were more than 3 million Argentinians, not thousand, 3 million with an M, Argentinians, who marched to protest the repeal of their abortion law. 3 million. They said, we are a pro-life country. We do not want to kill our babies. Many of the protesters included hundreds of doctors who said, we have taken an oath to protect life, not to be murderers. In the protest, hundreds of doctors gathered together and took their white coats and laid them down, saying that we have sworn with our professional lives and our internal integrity to protect life, not to be murderers. But if you listen to the Talking Snake media, you didn't even hear about this. You didn't even know this happened. They would have you believe that the entire world is embracing the notion that killing babies is a good thing. But not the Argentinians. In rebuking the repeal effort, and remember, this is to repeal the country's abortion laws, many of the speakers highlighted the fact that the number one proponent of repealing Argentina's abortion laws was, who do you think? The International Federation of Planned Parenthood. They spent millions of dollars. They lobbied Argentinian legislators. They funded think tanks. They used everything in their power to get Argentina to legalize abortion from zero, from conception to 14 weeks, which right now is illegal in Argentina. These legislators in Argentina resisted pressure from Amnesty International. They resisted pressure from the World Bank. Do you hear what I'm telling you? All because they want to maintain their stance, their long-held stance. It's a predominantly Catholic country where they don't want international abortion standards imposed on them. And that audio I played for you was them celebrating their successful resistance of the pressure from international groups. Most of the groups that were putting this pressure on were from outside of the country. Now, normally, the types of people who are the ones funding and putting this pressure on Argentinians, these are the same people who would normally decry Western involvement in the affairs of other nations. But they don't see any problem with doing it if they're trying to kill babies. How hypocritical is that? And so I just want to take a few moments and celebrate with the millions of Argentinians. To celebrate, I think there's still a long way to go. There are exceptions, you know, to be candid about it. But to celebrate the fact with them that they don't want to be open purveyors of death. Now, the contrasting reality is, because of the thin measure of the vote, 129 to 123 in the count in the country's House of Deputies and 38 to 31 in the Senate, what does that tell you? This is going to be a battle they're going to have to fight again. And the way things happen in legislative circles is most of the time they are advanced incrementally to where people who are advancing for a particular legislative outcome, they try to get a closer vote, and then hopefully to win. So I celebrate with the Argentinian people, but I want to remind them that you're going to have to fight this fight again. Now, I want to contrast for a moment. The Argentinian celebration with some comments that I came across today from former first daughter, Chelsea Clinton. Listen to what she had to say. I should say this. I'll just set it up for you. She was appearing at an event called Rise Up for Roe. What do you think this is about? If you would, Mr. Reed, please play clip number one.
If you care about social justice or economic justice, agency, you have to care about this, right? It is not a disconnected fact to Justice T-shirt of 1973 that American women entering the labor force from 1970 to 2009 added $3.5 trillion to our economy, right? Like the net new entrance of women, that is not disconnected from the fact that Roe became the law of the land in January of 1973. So I think whatever it is that people say they care about, I think you can connect to this issue. Of course, I would hope that they would care about our equal rights and dignity to make our own choices. But if that is not sufficiently persuasive, hopefully kind of some of these other arguments that you're hearing expressed so beautifully will be.
Where to start with this? So did I just hear her make an economic argument favoring killing women? And you heard her at the end, if you support equal rights and dignity, who's equal rights? The right to the baby being equal to every other human being. The right to the baby being the rights of the very people that our founders in the preamble said that we seek to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Well, what is posterity? Offspring? So you're more than willing, you are going to argue for equal rights, but you're more than willing to literally destroy the rights of another human being in furthering your particular objective. So let me start here. First, it's amazing to me, and this is evidence to me of people whose consciences become seared. It's amazing to me that we have people who would at the same time say you would celebrate social justice, to where some of the people who argue for social justice, they're arguing against what they would describe as an unjustified termination of human life. And they don't see the irony that they are supporting the unjustified termination of a human life, but couching it in terms of a woman's argument. It's amazing to me that the people who would decry the devaluation of human life don't see how they're devaluing human life. And this is such a thing that's so lost on our society that we don't understand when you pump with great troves of audacity the ideals into the minds, hearts, and heads of our citizens, beginning with the youngest among us, that tell them there's nothing unique, there's nothing sacred, there's nothing inherently valuable about human life, and yet you get upset when you see mass shooters going to schools and blowing people away. You don't see how the mass shooter is doing with a gun in one instance the very same thing that people with MDs behind their name do on a daily basis in abortion facilities. The fact that you don't see that connection is, to me, evidence that there is a blindness that is set in. And there is a crust that is calcified over the eyes, mind, and heart. How can you expect, you know, a young man who lives in a city where I came from, a neighborhood where I came from, to value human life, where you have people like her who will get on a television and her mom who will be in a presidential debate and say, you know what? If it's convenient for us and if it will aid our economic futures, it's okay to kill people. Guess what they're doing in the hood? If it's better for me and my economic future to kill you, guess what? I'm gonna blow you away. Do we not see that is the same thing? And Chelsea Clinton is literally arguing that the financial futures are bettered by killing certain people. So my question then goes, Chelsea, how far you want to take it? Because there's certainly some other people who say, well, there's some other human beings that are a little bit of a drag on my economic futures. Is it okay to kill them too? And if you say no, then tell me where on the line, the spectrum of humanity, when it becomes okay to kill one and not okay to kill another for financial gain. That's literally what she's arguing, that the women's future have been bettered by the ability to kill children, their own children. And then aren't these the very same people who would say, oh, but abortion is not about the money. Well, it's not about the money. It's not about the finances. Oh, no, this is about equality and a woman's right to choose. And she's literally making an argument. $3.5 trillion have been added to the economy by women because they've been able to kill their own children. And let me ask another question. How much money then could we have added to the economy if we didn't kill, 60 million babies since 1973? How many of those women could have added to the economy? And to argue that these things are all based on women's body parts and their genitalia, that the economy has been bolstered, that is an insult to women. This is foolishness and absolute lunacy and no consistency of logic. There is no consistency of logic. If you want to tell me that you're going to make an economic argument that enabling people to kill other human beings, and in this case, their very own children, with impunity, is better for the economy, well, you tell me where in the spectrum you're going to stop. Why not kill the 2-year-olds? What about the 5-year-olds? What about the 15-year-olds? I know a lot of people who have teenagers that cause them great economic harm. What about the 30-year-olds? How about the 44-year-olds? How about the 60-year-olds? How about the 65-year-old? How about the 70-year-old? You see where I'm going here? See, there's no way you can pick an arbitrary limit on the stage of human existence and say, at this point, now you have a viable right to kill that person. Not morally. Yet you literally have Hillary Clinton's daughter, Chelsea Clinton, making the argument that it is to America's financial benefit, even arguing that America's economy was bolstered and saved by the right to kill children in the womb.
folks, that's absolute ridiculousness, ludicrousness, and yes, I will add to that, foolishness.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered. And now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 855-PSALM-23 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundry man. I'm the son of a laundry man, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. An Indiana Catholic high school is under fire for following Catholic doctrine. Shelley Fitzgerald had been a guidance counselor at Roncalli High School for the past 15 years, but the other day she was put on administrative leave after school officials found out she'd been married to a woman since 2014. Turns out there's a rule at Roncalli High School. Employees must support the teachings of the Catholic Church, and that includes the one about marriage being between a man and a woman, a policy clearly defined in the contract every employee must sign. But parents and students and LGBT activists are defending Ms. Fitzgerald. They say it flies in the face of Catholic values like love and compassion and justice. Legal experts are siding with the Catholic Church. They say the church has every right under the Constitution to demand that employees follow a code of conduct. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. I'm just hanging out, being as calm, cool, and collected as I always am. If you listen to the program, you know that is not the case. We will open the phone lines this segment. If you want to be a part of the program, you are welcome to call. And people actually are already calling. You're welcome to call the number 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. Anything that we've addressed during this program is fair game. And I welcome you to call so we can have a conversation about what you want to talk about. Now, I just want to mention this, and I just want to make this point crystal clear. You have Chelsea Clinton literally arguing that the American economy has been bolstered, even putting a number on it, $3.5 trillion since 1973, because women have been able to kill children in the womb. And I pose this, and I really want this to really hit home. And this is a very basic conversation I want to have. But I think it'll really hit home. Much of the violence in larger American cities and the murder is happening. It's gang violence and it's drug related. Often you have one drug dealer in some place that'll they want to sell their drugs, and then there'll be another rival drug dealer who wants to sell their drugs in a similar area, and so they'll
sometimes, oftentimes, frequently kill the rival drug dealer because they want the financial benefit of having that person dead. You literally have Chelsea Clinton making the same argument in order to make financial gain. We as a society should sanction and even celebrate killing certain human beings in pursuit of financial remuneration. Folks, that's evil. That is evil. That is evil. When I prosecuted in Texas, one of the definitions for capital murder was murder for hire. We had a person who is a murderer who they get money as a result of killing somebody else. Yet, when you create a scenario where you include doctors and you put the political catchphrase women's choice, now it becomes a $1 billion industry. Folks, that's wicked. That's wicked. There ain't no two ways about it. Pardon my lack of grammatical correctness there, but ain't no two ways about it. That's evil. That's evil. And so when you see me celebrating with the Argentinians and literally hearing, maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was shocked to see so many people because the audio you heard was connected to a video. And when I saw all the people, I was thinking, man, what are they celebrating? And then I learned, oh, they're celebrating because they stopped the abortion, folks. I said, man, why did I see this on the news? Then I thought, wait a minute. I know why I don't see it on the news. Because they're full of snakes that talk. Let me go ahead and mention this. I forgot to do this at the beginning of the program. Today, August 14th, there are primaries in several states across the country. There are primary elections in Connecticut, Minnesota, South Dakota, Vermont, and Wisconsin. Please, please, please. I might have played James Brown. Please get out and vote. Less than, literally, anywhere between 3 and 8% of the electorate determines who the candidates become in the general election. I don't want to hear anybody complaining about the general election if you're not participating in the primaries. Please let your voice be heard. Literally, primary elections can be decided by hundreds, about thousands of votes, hundreds of votes, and even tens of votes in some jurisdictions. Get out and vote. And with that, we will go to the phone lines. We'll begin in Ohio, where Joe, you're starting to be a frequent caller, my friend. I thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just want to tell you you're on fire today. Thank the Lord for your blessings, because you've got a real gift as far as preaching the word and preaching the truth, and you're doing that today, and we all your listeners appreciate it. And, you hit on it. Just to piggyback on that, we've got some good Christian pro-life candidates in all four of the primary states. Connecticut, Vermont, got about 40 minutes left to get out and support the Christian conservative pro-life candidates in your district. Wisconsin and Minnesota, they've got probably about an hour and a half, 2 hours left to get out and support the Christian conservative pro-life candidates in their district. So thanks for all you do, and God bless you.
Well, thank you, Joe, for sharing that information, especially with the time updates, because I did not have that information in front of me. So I really, really appreciate that. Please take Joe's admonition to heart and get out in your states and participate in your primaries. In some places, you have just, 30 to 40 minutes left. And others, you have a little bit more time than that. But find out what's happening in your area and get out to the polls. All right, we'll go next to Tennessee, where Joseph is on the line. Joseph, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. When you said this, it just something came up in the scriptures is with the 70 million or 60 million that's been killed, it's just like Brother Tross just had that baby.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what that baby is going to become.
True.
That 60 or 70 million was all of the doctors, the CEOs, all of the different people that could have changed all the cure for all the diseases. It's just like Herod. It's that spirit of Herod with that one world government, and they're trying to destroy as many as they can so we don't get no more Billy Grahams, you see, no more people that can take leadership in a godly way and take and bring salvation to the earth.
Mm.
So it's very evil from the very beginning. It's satanic through the Illuminati and all of them. They are satanic. They're behind this, Soros, all of them. But it's all of the devil, because they're trying to kill off all of the people that God has sent here to give us the salvation that he desires.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you very much. And let me say this first and foremost. It's not limited to the spirit of Herod. I've said before, and I'll share this now.
Satan knows that the Lord has dispatched his church to destroy the works of darkness, that it is through the Lord's church that the manifold wisdom of God will be made evident to principalities and powers. And so Satan does not like to contend with a full-grown opposition. So prior to having to deal with full-grown opposition in the Lord's church, he likes to kill babies before they can grow. When there's a prophecy of a deliverer coming to Egypt, what is the demonic solution of Pharaoh? Kill all the men? No, baby boys. The prophecy of a Messiah coming to Israel, what is Herod's demonic conclusion? Kill all the men? No, all the baby boys. It's a repetitious phenomenon because Satan is not new. He's just been around people for a while, which is why he keeps playing the same old hits. See, a lot of people think that when we have struggles and difficulty, that Satan has this, you know, this customized plan of opposition tailor-made just for you. No, he doesn't. He's just been around human beings a long time, so he throws everything and the kitchen sink at you. But the Bible tells us we are led away of our own lusts. It is our own vulnerabilities that are exposed. It's not because Satan is so smart. It's not that. And so it is demonic at the root, to kill children and to literally, and I didn't say it, Chelsea Clinton said it herself, to discuss the economic benefit from killing children. I don't see how you can get any more, I'll say it this way, premeditatedly, if premeditatedly is a word, sociopathological. That is a premeditated sociopathological statement to say, well, you know what? You know what really helped me get a boost in my 401k? Let me just kill a few more children. Folks, that's sick. That's sick. And yet she says it in a celebratory fashion. In a celebratory fashion. Back to the phone lines we go. Next to Michigan, where you just nominated somebody in the Republican primary to be the next United States Senator in Michigan, Senator John James, Lord let it be so, in Michigan. Jim, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak, Abram. Heard you for quite some time now. I'm just praying, brother, that the Lord continues to use you in the healing between black and white Christians in this country. A lot of people out there drinking the Kool-Aid, what have you. I'm just praying that you help in that healing process. That was the first thing. Second thing, I wanted to comment on Chelsea's comments. I'm a little spun up right now, to be honest. I don't remember verbatim. I can't quote exactly what she said. But what came across was, once again, the women that were perpetuate, you know, their right for abortion. What about their responsibility when they go out and indulge in the actions that they're partaking in? They want to come across as being empowered nowadays and intellectual, and I can think for myself, and it's all about self. What about the potential of that baby? You know, yeah. What is it that they wash their hands of the responsibility of that?
Yeah, good call. Thank you very much, Jim, for your call and your comments, and I'm glad what you said. Because it gives me the opportunity to do two things. First, I also wanted to say in response to what Joe said earlier from Ohio, man, just glory to God. Also, what you said, Jim, glory to God. I just want to do what I can to lay my timber on the fire, so to speak, to fulfill the Lord's commission, execute his great commission. Secondly, I want to make sure I communicate this effectively. We don't want to misconstrue the value of human life, base that value on what performance the child can produce. Okay, it's very true that they could become, you know, presidents. They could become the first people, you know, to do what, you know, amazing feats. But that is not where the value lies. The value in human life is inherent. The value in innocent human life is inherent to that humanity because God has established that his image would be born in that humanity. The value is not based on the subsequent performance. Whether they become the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, that is not determinative of that value. The value is because the God, the same God who condescended to put on human flesh, he has emblazoned his image into human life. When you hear phrases of deoxynucleic ribonucleic acid, DNA, you should think God coding. God has coded his image into the intrinsic nature of humanity. And so it is because he has done that, that innocent human life carries this intrinsic value. So I just want to emphasize that. And additionally, to your point, Jim, which is a point that I've made repeatedly, you want to talk about celebrating women. In my estimation, there is no greater insult
than to condemn women to be, you know, unable to judiciously govern their reproductive capacities. And I'm talking about the activity that produces life. To live and act as if, well, you know, the women can't do anything. They can't help it. There's nothing they can do. We got to let them kill the babies. I mean, what you want to do? They're just humping and hotting and hopping all around, just a wanting and wanting and woo. That's an insult, folks, to treat women as if they, you want to talk about a woman's choice, as if they have no choice to what they do with their bodies prior to conceiving. To take the position that women are just base animals is demeaning to women. How do we not understand that? To say that, well, really, if you're going to be equality supporters and celebrate the dignity that women have, you certainly have to let them kill their children. Folks, that's sad. That's sad. And we have large swaths of our society just drinking up big gulps, drinking the Kool-Aid, big gulps. That is an insult. As a man, if you tell me I can't control my urges, I'm insulted. What? One of the touchstone evidences of the spirits dwelling in any human being is self-control. So by telling people that they have no self-control, you're basically saying it's impossible for you to be filled with the Spirit of God. That's what they're saying. Folks, it's sad. Back to the phone lines. We go next to Florida, where Morris is on the line. Morris, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Hamilton, man. This is great. Yeah, I just got a statement. It pertains to the left side. It doesn't really matter. It's not pertains to the abortion situation, but I read this passage in a book called The Horse and His Boy. Mr. Hamilton, true or false? And this is what it said, true or false. Attention to business is the route to prosperity. But to ask questions